I've reached my limits. You may have used that phrase, you may have thought about that phrase. It just simply means I've reached a point that I just cannot continue doing what I'm doing. It could be because my patience for it is completely gone, or maybe my energy has been taxed beyond its limit, or maybe I'm just tired of it and I simply do not want to do it any longer. I've done what I could. I've done what I've been asked to do up until now. I've gone the second mile. I'm not going to go any further. I'm done. My limit has been reached. Well, the term in some of these meetings probably give us a little bit of insight in how Jonah was feeling when God called him to go speak against the people of Nineveh, the capital of Assyria, an evil nation. We don't know a whole lot about Jonah. Outside of the book of Jonah, we learned a little bit about him there. But in 2 Kings chapter 14, we get a little snapshot of who Jonah was. When God instructed him to go and prophesy to King Jeroboam II, the king of the northern kingdom of Israel. And it reads this: He, Jeroboam, restored the border of Israel from Lebo Hamath as far as the Sea of Arabah, according to the word of the Lord, the God of Israel, which he spoke by his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet who is from Gath-Hepher. For the Lord saw that the affliction of Israel was very bitter, for there was none left, bond or free, and there is none to help Israel. Jonah was proudly considered a hero when he encouraged King Jeroboam to restore Israel's boundaries to what it had been earlier. These were lands that were lost to their rival kingdom to the south, the kingdom of Judah. And King Jeroboam, at the behest of Jonah, brought Israel back to its glory. Now, the thing that's interesting are the verses right before these verses, which read this: In the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, began to reign in Samaria. And he reigned 41 years. And he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. So this Jeroboam wasn't a good guy. He was pretty bad. He was evil. He was like the original Jeroboam, who ruled the kingdom of Israel after it had broken away from the southern kingdom. When the one kingdom of Israel became the kingdom of Judah to the south and kingdom of Israel to the north. Jeroboam the first started a cult of worshiping the golden calf. Not because he was very religious, he wasn't really religious at all, but he saw it as a way to maintain his political power in the northern kingdom. Because the cult's purpose was simply to keep the people of Israel divided. He didn't want them going down to the southern kingdom of Judah, where Jerusalem was, where the temple of Solomon was. He didn't want people to going there to worship, because if they were starting to go down there, they might get this idea that just maybe they should reunify. So it was all politics, about keeping the people divided. Imagine that, a politician seeking to divide people in order to remain in power. I am so glad that's just so rare these days. Jeroboam II continued this practice to lead Israel into idolatry for the sake of just remaining in power. But God had mercy on them nonetheless, despite their sin. He was faithful to them, to the promises he had made to them, even though they were not faithful to him. And in this passage, and we only get a glimpse of Jonah here, but there doesn't seem to even be a sense of misgiving or doubt about giving this positive message to an evil king and to an unfaithful people. Other than this passage, we know mostly about Jonah from the book of Jonah. So why don't we take a moment this morning and we will begin our navigation through the book of Jonah. In Jonah chapter 1, it begins this: "Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, 'Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come upon me.' But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa, and he found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare, and he went down into it to go with them to Tarshish away from the presence of the Lord." Now, Nineveh was the capital of the Assyrian kingdom, and the Assyrians were wicked and brutal. They were a feared, ruthless enemy of Israel. Now, you would think Jonah would be all in favor of going and speaking against them, speaking a word of the Lord against them, but he wasn't. So why didn't he want to go? Was he afraid of his safety? No. No indication of that. Was he unsure about what to say? Oh, I'm pretty sure he knew what he wanted to say. Did he think they didn't deserve condemnation? No, that would not be it at all. He actually thought that he probably deserved anything that they could get because they were an evil people. The problem was he understood what speaking against them meant. It wasn't about bringing or announcing condemnation. It was actually giving them a chance to repent and to turn to God. And this is what he couldn't tolerate. He could not stand the idea that the enemy of his people, this wicked lot, might get a chance to turn their heart, turn away from their evilness and their sinfulness to God, and that God would forgive them. In Jonah, we see God's mission at work. He had established Israel to be a blessing to all people. They were supposed to be the ones that went out and told other nations about the one true God. And here Jonah has that opportunity to do that, and he refused to do it. He stubbornly refused the calling. What he did was he allowed his own opinions, his biases, and his prejudices to condemn a people that God wanted to forgive. So instead of going to 725 miles across land, that's a pretty major thoroughfare, and actually for that time and place, well, there's some danger, pretty safe, he paid his way to travel 2,000 miles across the dangerous Mediterranean Sea to Tarshish, which we believe is probably located in Spain. And the term for paying the fare actually could also mean that he bought the ship. So no expense. He was leaving no expense. No expense was too great for him to be able to get out of this calling. He was on a personal mission to make sure the people of Nineveh were condemned instead of God's mission of redemption. You know, when we take a look at this, there can become a dangerous aspect when we talk about those that we identify with. And, you know, there is a sense that we want a healthy community or maybe a healthy teamwork, but there comes times that sometimes it slips into more of a militant tribalism, maybe more about identity politics instead of actually standing on principle. And we start seeing that when we don't criticize people we identify with or our team, our party, our affiliates, as so much. We see it especially when someone in authority demands the removal of somebody that he or she might think has been disloyal, and to replace them with loyal followers. We see it when people are not able to even offer good advice to the opposition, even when they're doing good and doing something that we should support. Because goodness, they might get a good name or they might get credit for it. It becomes dangerous when it is just us against them and we really don't care about them and their well-being. It's a dangerous thing, prejudice. It allows us to discredit, devalue, and dehumanize someone that we don't like in order to be comfortable with our prejudices against them and comfortable with our hate for them and comfortable with the condemnation that we hope befalls them. Jonah didn't want a chance of redemption for his perceived enemies. And our warning here to this morning would be we cannot be like Jonah and allow our prejudices and our biases to keep us from reaching out to those that we might see as an enemy with the love of Christ. So we continue in the passage. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid, and each cried out to his God, and they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had lain down and was fast asleep. So the captain came and said to him, "What do you mean, O sleeper? Arise, call out to your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish." So in other words, what is happening after Jonah gets on this boat and they go out to sea is that the weather started getting rough. The tiny ship was tossed. If it weren't for the courage of the fearless crew, that's another ship. But look how bad it was. The ship was beginning to come apart. So a wooden vessel, there would be planks, and as the sea would toss the ship back and forth in a terrible storm, those planks would start loosening. Remember reading the book a long time ago where a man was crossing in a wooden, small wooden boat, a sailboat, and he was going to sell it from, he was sailing from England to Maine, and as he was going across and the weather was getting rough, and all of a sudden the caulking was coming out of the planks. And he's in the middle of the ocean, just under sail, no engine, no electricity to speak of. And he was afraid. Well, they were afraid. They knew as those planks came undone, they were in danger of sinking. And they began to pray. They were afraid. They began to call out to their pagan gods. And when there was no answer, they did the next thing they knew to do, and that was to get rid of the cargo. And that was no small decision because the cargo was their salary. They would go to Tarshish, sell their cargo, and be paid. So they were throwing away their livelihood just in order that they could live. The captain eventually noticed that Jonah was not to be seen. He wasn't helping. He wasn't praying. So he went to find him and found him fast asleep. Was Jonah asleep because he was exhausted from his running from God's presence, because of the physical and emotional toll that it was taking on him? We don't know. But the captain wanted him to pray to his God just in case they might be rescued. There's a couple of lessons we learned just from this storm. One, it wasn't God's punishment for Jonah's disobedience. Really, it was God trying to get Jonah's attention. And sometimes in difficult times, a storm might rise for punishment or discipline. Sometimes it might be to get our attention. Sometimes it's there to make us stronger. So we should never jump to conclusions, especially when we see somebody that's going through the storm. The other thing that is really stands out is that his disobedience, Jonah's disobedience, caused hardship on these sailors. And sometimes we hear the term victimless crime. You know, there's crimes that really don't affect anybody. That's not true. All crime affects somebody else other than the person who's doing it. Self-destructive behavior, bad choices often result in causing difficulties for other people. When we do not obey, when we stray, when we sin, it always has consequences, not for ourselves, but for those close to us. And sometimes even those that are a little further out that we just associate with. And often it does cause hardships on other people, because what disobedience is really selfishness. It's not just disobedience and being selfish that I don't want to do God's will, but it's a selfishness about I don't care how it affects anybody else. And then in verse 7, then we pick up, and they said to one another, come, let us cast lots, that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us. So they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. Then they said to him, tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation? And where do you come from? What is your country? And what people are you? And he said to them, I'm a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and dry land. Then the men were exceedingly afraid, and they said to him, what is it that you have done? For the men knew he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord because he told them. Interesting, they cast lots. It's just an ancient way that they used to try to figure out God's will, and this time it actually was correct, and pointing the finger to Jonah. So they were trying to get to the bottom of things about who are you, what do you do, why is this happening? And Jonah's answer is actually quite remarkable here. Actually, he is doing exactly what a prophet should do in this moment. He talks to this Gentile sailors. He talks to them in ways that they would understand. He doesn't say that he's an Israelite, because that's not how the world saw the Israelites. They saw them as Hebrews. So he used the term Hebrew. I'm a Hebrew. And I fear the Lord. The Lord is Yahweh, using God's proper name. He wants them to know who God is. The God of heaven, the Almighty of heaven. Not some tribal deity like you guys are worshiping, but the one true God. So you see what he's doing is he's using their language now, and he's bringing them around and making them understand who God is. Just what the prophet is supposed to do. Isn't that interesting? And then he says, who made the sea and dry land? Now, a lot of times when people, when you hear the Hebrews or Israelites talk about God, what do they say? You're the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, that would mean nothing to these sailors, but to say the God who actually makes the sea and land, well, they knew that. They understood that. They're all about sea and the land. Jonah was talking their language. He was revealing the one true God to them, and it had an impact. And then in verse 10, it talks about, then the men were exceedingly afraid. Notice it doesn't say sailors. We move from their occupation to their humanity. That they're now on equal footing with Jonah. They were exceedingly afraid, and they said to him, what is it that you have done? For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. Jonah had told him he was trying to escape. And they're trying to get to the bottom. Why are you escaping? And for Jonah, he was learning a very hard lesson, a lesson from Psalm 139, where David said, where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? Even in the innermost parts of the sea, God is there. And they continue in verse 11. Then they said to him, "What shall we do to you that the sea may quiet down for us?" For the sea grew more and more tempestuous. He said to them, "Pick me up and hurl me into the sea. Then the sea will be quiet down for you. For I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you." Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to the dry land, but they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them. Therefore, they called out to the Lord, "O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life. Lay not on us innocent blood for you. O Lord, have done as it has pleased you. So they picked up Jonah and hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. And then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. They simply wanted to know what to do, and they weren't happy with Jonah. And they probably saw the sense of it. Well, if it's your problem and we throw you in the sea, that probably worked. But there was something already at work in them. Probably if they were still those hardened sailors, they would probably have thrown him into the water pretty quickly. But something was changing within them. And they weren't about to throw him in without at least another effort. So they tried with all their might to row that ship back to the land, and they couldn't. So they called out to the one God. They called him by name. They called out not to their tribal deities, but to the one true God. And they called out and asked for mercy because they knew they were about to cast somebody into the water. And then they did, and the storm stopped. And these men demonstrated a faith in God. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice. They offered sacrifices for their sins, and they made commitment to God. Now, God did a very God thing in the midst of this storm. He used Jonah's disobedience to ultimately bring these men to faith. That's pretty amazing. And Jonah, in the midst of that storm, did exactly what the prophet was supposed to do. He revealed who God was to these men. And then the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. After this, we just assume, most likely, those sailors turned about and went back to port because they had no cargo. But they went back to port with two things: a newfound faith in God and an incredible fish story that any sailor would want. The mission of salvation is moving through these chapters of Jonah, and we'll see. We see that initially the first place is to these Gentile sailors. But God still has his eye on Nineveh. And Jonah must fulfill that mission. Ultimately, the mission of salvation, as we know, has been fulfilled by Jesus Christ, who came to rescue us from the consequences, the eternal consequences of our sin. Even while we were enemies of God, he came and he died for us. He stepped out of the peacefulness of heaven and into the storm of our humanity, the storm of our making. And he experienced ridicule, rejection, and execution. But his death served as the ultimate sacrifice for our sins. And Jesus said that the ultimate proof of who he is and his mission would be the sign of Jonah. He would die, be buried for 3 days, and rise again on the third day, showing he has ultimate power over sin and death. That great sacrifice takes effect when we commit ourselves to his mercy and grace, confessing Christ as the Son of God, recognizing that he is the one who rescues. So today, as we come before the Lord's table, we should commit ourselves afresh as followers of Christ, willing to put aside our biases, our prejudices, in order to share the gospel with those that we may not like very well. and seeking to allow our disobedience to hinder others and to bring grief to others, but always seeking the best of those around us with the gospel's sake.